Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Well, we here at The Takeaway are trying to put together a briefing book for President-elect Barack Obama. What should he be reading? What issues should be at the top of his agenda? And we're asking for your advice.
Hi, Jim Mashiki from Yonkers. And I think you should read the book called Enough. That is about our fixation on numbers, and we're not looking at what's really important, like character and all those other cute things that we should be looking at.
What would you add? What page of Barack Obama's briefing book would you put in? Give us a call, 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
Enough. That's Juan Williams wrote that book, actually. So, in the early moments of the Barack Obama administration, what is going to be dealt with? Well, there is a suspicion that one of the things that's going to be dealt with is the relationship between the executive branch and Congress, that relationship has gotten seriously out of whack in the 8 years of the Bush-Cheney administration. And here to talk about what some senators on Capitol Hill are thinking about that relationship and what's changed over the last 8 years is Jonathan Mahler, a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. And a friend of our program. John Mahler joins us on the phone from Brooklyn. John, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Now, for your article for the Sunday Times Magazine this Sunday, you interviewed some senators who expressed a lot of concern about how the separation of powers relationship has really changed between the White House and Congress. Describe.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I spent quite a bit of time with a handful of senators both on both sides of the aisle. The sort of central figures are Warner, Specter, Graham, Lindsey Graham, and Patrick Leahy. And yeah, there is a real concern there among a number of these guys that the Congress is no longer a kind of a co-equal partner in our government, and certainly one of the defining features of the Bush administration was this sort of massive expansion of presidential power, and it came very much at the expense of a passive Congress, and that's certainly going to be a concern going forward as well.
And we're talking about issues like domestic surveillance,
the easiest way to look at it is in terms of the war on terror and what the warrantless wiretapping program, the dozens of signing statements in which the president essentially said that he wasn't obligated to follow the letter of the law that he just signed into being,
and the use of the commander in chief phrase
exactly,
in Article 2 to basically say I can do anything,
exactly the inherent quote unquote inherent authority that he claimed he derived.
And actually, Jonathan, I was really struck by that, where you quote Senator Lindsey Graham as saying that the Bush administration came up with a pretty aggressive, bordering on bizarre theory of inherent authority that had no boundaries. So why didn't they do something about it? Why didn't they do something about it?
That's the logical next question. And that also, I think, in many ways goes to the problem, the larger problem with Congress, and I focused in particular on the Senate, and that is that basically nowadays senators are far more loyal to their party than they are to the institution and indeed to their constituents. So you have this problem where Republican senators, when there's a Republican in the White House, as was the case for quite a while during the Bush administration, are reluctant to put any pressure on the president because they feel a certain kind of party loyalty to protect him, and that's not what Congress is supposed to do. Congress is supposed to check the president. Congress is supposed to prevent the president from overstepping his authority, and they're supposed to act aggressively to do that, that's where we are now.
Or as the case may be, the vice president. There's a great piece in the New York Review of Books this in the latest issue about taking off from what Arlen Specter told you, the senator from Pennsylvania, that decades from now historians will look back at what happened over the last 8 years and go, what did happen here? And that was very much the impression of the power that the vice presidency has managed to acquire.
That's
during
right.
The Bush administration. What did senators have to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, it's really quite staggering. I mean, Cheney would would basically go up every single week. He'd go up to Capitol Hill and caucus with the Republicans, and that's not supposed to happen. They're supposed to keep the executive branch out of their conversations.
I mean, the irony is that we've gotten so used to this notion of the vice president being in charge as kind of a shadow authority that when Sarah Palin says on the campaign trail he's the president of the Senate, most people go, yeah, well, that's right.
Right. I think that's absolutely right. And of course, we all have to. Things are certainly going to be different going forward because in Obama we're going to have someone who's going to take a very different approach and attitude towards the president's obligation to uphold the nation's laws and treaties, but not.
I mean, okay, so he's going to arrive in the White House. He's going to go, wow, look at these superpowers.
Exactly.
I'm going to get rid of these.
Exactly. That's the big but here, which is that every president naturally wants to do everything he can to advance his agenda, and so so while he may do so, he may take a slightly different approach to it. I think we're always going to be looking at the same situation, and in fact I think that's why we have a Congress, because the framers understood that every president was going to do this.
Well, and the Teddy Roosevelt history is important in as a lesson here, that he was very controversial for expanding powers under his administration, but it wasn't like Woodrow Wilson rolled them back.
That's right.
Would say in the Barack Obama case, this is a constitutional lawyer,
right.
This
exactly.
is a legal scholar.
Yep.
How does that figure in here?
It certainly figures in, and presidential power was not a big issue during the campaign, unfortunately. But when Obama did speak to the issue, he did express a very different point of view from Bush. I mean, he once stated very explicitly in an interview with the Boston Globe that the president is not above the law. The president has to abide by the laws of the United States and the letter of the law of the Constitution. So that's all encouraging. On the other hand, again, I think that it's a mistake to see this as a political question, to think, oh, well, the Republicans are always going to try to, they're going to have this idea of inherent authority and the unitary executive. They're going to try to amass as much power as possible, whereas the Democrats are going to take a very different attitude towards presidential power. That's not true. I mean, Clinton, for example, was really attempted to do a great number of things that were sort of very muscular.
And FDR tried to pack the Supreme Court
Absolutely.
During the New Deal. Jonathan Mahler, Absolutely. As always, a fascinating discussion. Contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine, Jonathan Mahler, has a piece on this separation of power question as the transition for the Obama administration gets going. Thanks, Jonathan.
My pleasure.